Sonara is based in Germany and is the first company in Europe to produce cell-cultivated milk. It was founded 2 years ago, and since then, the cost per litre of cell-cultivated milk has reduced from 300,000 euros to 500 euros. Svenja, the CEO and co-founder, tells me that they expect the price to reach parity following sufficient scale-up and collaboration. Cell-cultivated milk may mean we'll be trying cow-free products such as chocolate and cheese before too long. In this latest Future of Foods interviews with Svenja Danowitz-Proseder, I find out how it's made, the benefits, and its place in the future of food. I'm Alex Crisp, and thank you for listening to Future of Foods interviews. Okay, so thank you, Svenja, for joining me on Future of Foods interviews. You are the CEO and CSO of Sonara GmbH. Sonara is the first company in the EU to develop the technology around cultivated milk, and no company in the world has yet received regulatory approval. Svenja, could you just introduce yourself a little bit, give us some background, and what inspired you to start a cultivated milk company?
Alex, yes, thank you so much for the invitation. I'm honored to be on your podcast today. I've been working on developing the first cell-cultivated milk for the last, well, two and a half years. At Sonara, we founded Sonara in 2022, and we come from, both me and my co-founder, we've come from a background in, the biomedical sciences, biology, with a medical background. And from that experience we had in academia, we wanted to build something that really has a value also in everyday life. There is so much that you learn from the learnings that you develop in scientific research, but that never see the light of day. And that was a big motivator for us to really use the technology that we've developed.
Okay, and your co-founder is your husband. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. That is what it takes in science, because you do also normally have to give a lot of personal sacrifices. So this only works if both people pull on the same string. So we have a shared motivation to really push science forward.
Yes. So what exactly is cultivated milk, and how does it differ from traditional milk?
Not at all. is the short answer. The long answer, of course, is a bit more complicated. So cell-cultivated milk is a milk that produced by lactating cells. So we use cells that are directly obtained from animals. We can obtain them, for example, from the milk of animals. You can also go from the tissue. Both works well. And then the cells, they do exactly what they would do in the animal. They keep on lactating. So the milk, in the end, the composition, is something that has the potential to be exactly the same as normal milk. The only difference is that it's produced in a better way. So it's produced, instead of being produced in the animal, which has, they're living on farms. There is a lot of dirt. They may be getting diseases. You also see, sometimes infections that go into the milk for normal animals. And we don't have that because we produce the milk not on a farm, not in nature, but in a controlled, sterile environment. So in the end, you get milk, but the purest form of milk possible. So no contaminants, no microorganisms that may normally be present.
So there are clearly lots of benefits to creating cultivated milk for the consumer. Are there any benefits to the environment or
I would say so. So the benefits, the manifold. We also see that in the people that actually work for the company. We ask them at some point, you know, what's your motivation? Why do you want to work for this company and like push the development forward for this? And everybody has their own perception on this. So some do it for, you know, for the animal welfare benefits. Others do it because of the environment, because we have a lot lower emissions that are associated with the production of the milk. Others, they do it because they really want to secure milk as we know it for the next generation, you know, like for our kids. They may not come into the into the benefit of being able to drink normal milk. It may become a product that isn't readily available anymore. And for these reasons, yeah, there is many benefits towards using this, not only the safety of the milk quality, but also environment, animal welfare, supply as well, you know, securing the supply.
So could you just give us a quick explanation? Obviously, it's a lot more complicated, but could you kind of walk us through the process of creating cultivated milk. How is it done?
Sure, absolutely. Of what I can share, I'm happy to walk you through that. So, of course, the details, they are still proprietary. There's only a few companies worldwide who are doing this. So it's a very, well, yeah, state-of-the-art field, but the process in general is pretty straightforward. So we obtain cells, as I mentioned, directly from the animals. We can go we can collect those cells from the fresh milk, or we can also collect it from the tissue, which would involve something like a tissue biopsy, which is in the end is a very small needle that takes a little bit of the tissue out of the mammary glands. And then once we have cells, we select them for those ones that are the best to actually produce milk, which, yeah, there are certain qualities that we look for in the cells. It's different expression profiles that we select the cells on. And when we have those cells that are the best at producing milk, we purify them, we bring them into our bioreactors, and we expand them. So we want, of course, to have a large amount of cells, which is the first phase of the process. Once we have enough cells, we bring them into our bioreactor, and there they can continuously produce milk. The aim is to have that process running for around 6 months. And during that time, we will have a constant supply of milk. Of course, you can go from different types of cells. They can come from all kinds of animals. So in the end, every animal that would be able to give milk can be used for producing milk also in our bioreactors. And that is very advantageous because it gives you the full range of products that you can then also make. So
Yeah, I mean, this is very interesting, isn't it? That's kind of milk production become it can become species bespoke. So obviously, you know, there are some arguments to whether we should be drinking the milk from a different species, but I mean, this brings us on to a whole different conversation. So, with the cells from the milk, can they keep reproducing, or do you have to kind of keep kind of taking new cells every few months or every 6 months? How long can one set of cells keep producing the same milk?
Well, the way in which we have set up our process really builds around the whole topic of a holistic milk production. So we are collaborating, we're also looking for collaborating farmers. We have set up collaborative projects that can be used to build like a holistic milk production. That also means that we rely on a fresh supply of cells. We do not immortalize the cells or genetically modify the cells. We use those cells that are directly obtainable from the animal. So it is the cells that normally also produce the milk. And that means there is an end date towards how long these cells will lactate in our bioreactors. The advantages are, of course, that they are not changing during that amount of time. So we envision a time frame of around 6 months. It could be extended to maybe 9 months if we're good. At the moment, we are producing for a maximum of 3 months, but the time frame is limited. The cells become less productive at some point, and we want to kind of find the sweet spot where they are still as close as possible to what they were doing in the animal, but then also make it something that makes sense from the economic point of view, so that we kind of find the sweet spot of the time frame for production.
Okay. And so what challenges, because this sounds like quite a complicated process. So what are the main challenges that you've been facing and perhaps that you're facing now?
It is a really innovative process, right? So it's one of a kind. It's never been done before. We are not building on, like beer brewing. We're not building on hundreds of years of expertise in this topic. It is something really novel, something really new. So there are like childhood development steps that you still have to go through. Just like cell-cultivated meat, of course, in the beginning, it was something that's really expensive to do. The first kind of liter of milk, if we would have produced a whole liter of milk, we would have had to spend maybe around 300,000 euros for a liter of milk. So the cost was extreme. We have reduced the cost in the last 2 years. So now that is becoming less and less relevant. However, nobody would want to spend 500 euros for a liter of milk. So we still have a long way to go. But that is part of one of the main obstacles, of course, the scaling and reducing the cost, which goes hand in hand. We then need to bring this to market. So the time frame, by the time that we enter the markets, it'll be there will be steps that we still have to go there. We need to obtain regulatory approval. There has never been a regulatory approval for cell-cultivated milk. For cell-cultivated meat, by now, there are regulatory approvals, but because there are so few companies focusing on cell-cultivated milk production, nobody has put in a regulatory application as of yet, which we think will change in the next in geographic Europe. Of course, there is also the Asian space. Singapore is going strong in embracing and approaching these novel techniques. That's our current state of play.
Okay, so and you say it currently it would cost 500 euros to produce a liter of the cell cultivated milk. What is the expense particularly in
It's a very hands-on technique at the moment still. So we have people who manually have to operate and control every single step of the process. People are expensive, so it's salaries. It also is the cell cultivation media. Typically the cell cultivation media you use for culturing cells is something that you obtain in the pharmaceutical industry. So it's pharma grade media. Pharma grade is always very expensive. And it meets a lot higher restrictions than what you need for food grade media. So the cost for that can be dramatically reduced. But then also the infrastructure. anytime you do something in a very small scale, I mean the bioreactor that we use currently, I mean that we've used for the past year, it can fit between the palms of your hand pretty much. But the bioreactor that you need for producing something that comes close to price parity is something that you would have to put like in the corner of a room, you know. So that difference in scale, it's a manageable scale, but the upscaling will reduce the cost.
Okay. So you have a product now that is something like milk. How close to milk is it? Have you received any feedback from people who have tried it?
Yes, so we've looked in detail into the composition of the milk. So we know that we have a good macromolecular percentage of the components that should be there. So for example, the protein components, there is caseins, there is whey, there is also the sugars, you know, there is the lactose. We have some fatty acids. We can still kind of tweak that. I think that's the main difference still, where we haven't really looked in detail into all of the different fatty acids that we would want to see, because there's over, you know, 200 different kinds that we know of that should be present in normal milk. So it's a complex composition. Vitamins, but the details need to be tweaked. For the tastings, unfortunately, we're not allowed to do any tastings yet, which comes back to the regulatory front. We are planning to conduct some tastings this year if we get the approval to do this, and then we will have a wider range of feedback on whether this is something that tastes exactly the same or what kind of aspects of the milk we still have to adapt and tweak.
I suspect you've had a little taste of it yourself, though, right?
Well, the quantities that we produce were really, really small.
Right.
We know that we still had a little bit too high of a quantity of minerals, so I would say it's maybe a little bit too salty. Yeah, it depends on the application. So for applications where, for example, you only extract the protein components like the whey or the casein, you can use it as an ingredient. Whether I would use it as a full milk that you sell in the market, I think we'll have a way. I mean, there is more research to be done on that front. But it does have the potential to reach that, just because the cells, we know that the cells, they are capable of producing a full milk. It just depends on how we treat them so that they really live up to their full potential.
Okay. And so I assume that you have a strategy at the moment. You are kind of finding partners and collaborations. So how do you see the cultivated milk being used in a commercial way going forward?
Plenty of applications. I think the potential is pretty much unlimited. If you look at all the products that use milk at the moment, any of these products could use our milk to replace primary animal milk. So you can go from all kinds of dairy products, cheeses, yogurts. I mean, we've tested applications in our own lab to see if we can use our milk for this purpose. There is confectionery, there is also the ingredient space, the inclusion of proteins in all kinds of products is also going strong. I mean, you have it in bread, for example, it's included now, or in high protein cheeses, high protein products are going strong. And because the milk that we produce, I mean, it's something that is fully functional, so you have all of the components in there. You don't just produce like a single compound. You don't produce just the protein fraction or just one part of the protein fraction. But you produce a full milk, so it's fully applicable to all kinds of downstream applications. We're looking for partnerships at the moment. We are in discussion with several partners for R&D collaborations to produce a milk that is specifically suited towards the downstream applications. But yeah, there is considerable commercial interest. We have also spoken to leaders in the dairy industry. And the ones that we spoke to, they pretty much all agreed that the alternative protein and self-cultivated milk space will make up a considerable part of the whole dairy market. By 2030, I think the numbers that we were discussing were at least something between 5%, pretty much. It could be 5% of the global dairy market by 2030.
Wow, that's a big proportion. That's kind of huge figures, I suppose, isn't it? So where might we see your product first on the shelves? In what sort of type of product?
Well, if you look at the geography, we are hoping that it is going to be Europe. Well, we have some evidence that Europe is really approaching this in a proactive manner. Presumably, it can also appear first in Asia. Singapore is very interested in pushing this forward. They have a big interest to bring this onto the market. I do not believe that we will have a full milk as the first product in the market. I think for the time being, the ingredient space is something very interesting, just because we cannot produce at the volumes that the dairy industry can currently operate at. I mean, it's billions of liters. That is not achievable in a year or two. But inclusion in different products, if you have, for example, a pizza where this is included, or a confectionery product, potentially even the pet food industry in the UK has given approval to sell cultivated meat. That's another interesting product where it might appear.
So, regulatory hurdles are clearly a bit of a boundary to entry. You mentioned the UK pet food, but you also said that Europe might be one of the first places that you could see yourself producing this product. But as yet, Europe has been quite slow, haven't they, with their kind of regulatory approvals? So, do you think that's going to be a problem, kind of regulation wise?
I do think that the European Union is very interested in receiving more applications. Startups have been very reluctant to go there just because it's kind of the holy grail in terms of quality-wise and in terms of, if you have the stamp of approval of the European Union, it means a lot. There are very rigorous tests that you have to undergo through to get regulatory approval here. But I think if we want to do it right, then we should go for the strictest measurements so that, everybody can be sure that what we have is something high quality. It is not something, chemically mixed together. It is a real full milk. It's just a different production process. And that's why we believe the European Union will be a great place to start this. It is slower, but I think in the end it is worth it.
I suppose it's once you get an approval from Europe or the USA, then other countries would be they would put it in the VIP lane, in the fast lane. They'd be more kind of willing to approve So it's probably worth putting the effort in that way around. So what do you think the consumer acceptance is going to be like? Do you think consumers will be quite happy to try cultivated milk?
We're currently conducting consumer acceptance survey to get more data on this. Based on the first interviews that we had, yes, there seems to be a very big part of consumers who are very happy to switch to using this type of milk. I mean, they are used to trying out different milks. There is lots of options nowadays for plant-based milks. And as long as they have been tested for health and safety and all these regulatory checks are in place, there should be no obstacle to switching to something that is that has all of these benefits, the environmental benefits, the animal welfare benefits, and also the milk quality, there, because the production process is controlled, it is much more supportive of a good health. So you do not have antibiotics that are contaminating the milk. You don't have any pharmaceuticals that get into the milk, which normally you would have. So the benefits are great. As long as the price is right and the taste is right and the governments are giving their approval, I do not see a major obstacle on
Yeah.
this.
Do you think, I mean, that there has been some kind of negative press around kind of cultivated meat, but also around kind of plant-based meat alternatives and that sort of thing. I suppose the fear is that if the media don't give it a positive bent, then perhaps the consumers might balk at it. I mean, do you think that might be a problem?
Well, the media, of course, can change the narrative of what we want to see. I think the consumers are clever enough to decide what really is behind this. The cell-cultivated meat industry, they have been struggling with really high prices. They have waiting lists of people who really want to try this novel innovation, but they cannot produce quickly enough to really help consumers form their own opinion, because you can only do that if you have a product in the market, everybody can test it, everybody can see, okay, is this something that really tastes good? And the narrative, I mean, if you think about eating food, you will always find something wrong, also with traditionally produced food. If you are thinking about having to slaughter an animal to get the meat, or the way in which milk is produced. I don't want to go into the details, but you can look up how that normally takes place. It's also not ideal, but we do need to eat, and I don't think that will ever change. We're a growing world population. We need to feed all of the people on the planet, and why not do it in a better way? I mean, we can, I think, sticking to tradition and traditional production, there is benefits to that, but we need to be sensible in adapting to future challenges. So let's keep what is good. And let's transform what is not so good. And in my view, milk is fantastic. Milk is a great product. But the way in which it's produced is not ideal. So in that regard, I think we have to become better.
So one of the responses I often get when I mention to people I know and people I meet about kind of cultivated milk and cultivated meat is one of the first things they say is, "What will happen to all the animals? Where will they go? They'll have to find a new job." Now, obviously, with cultivated milk, there will still be a requirement for cows. How do you see farming in the future? How do you see it kind of, What's the vision, I suppose?
Well, we see a great potential for this to help the farming community to become self-sufficient. Because if you look at a farm as a business model, it just doesn't work. It is something that people do, as a hobby, pretty much. If they have a small, sustainable farm, it is not something that really brings in the big bucks. That is not what a farm is for. You do it because you love animals and you want to provide, you want to provide food. And that is something where we can come in and help. So we can make farming and sustainable farming in particular a profitable business model as well, and not just something that you do because it gives you value, it gives you purpose. We have dedicated bioreactors that we can provide for participating farms, which are suitable to be operated on a farm. So we're in development with this as well. We have on our wait list, we actually do have farmers who want to diversify the milk that they produce. So, for example, we have one farmer who produces standard milk, and he said, "Well, if I can produce a milk rich in A2, or a milk from a special animal, then I can sell this also for a higher price per liter." So we really want to come to a point where we have this holistic model of collaborating with farms, where the farms, they have to adapt, they have to change the way that they produce. The for example, plant-based sources can be plant-based components can be used for input for the cultivation media for the cells, so the nutrients the cells need, and they can be provided by farmers who are collaborating. We also need cells, which is a constant source. And if those farmers kind of adapt their farming practices, they can really come to a model that works really well also economically and is good for the animals. Now, in some countries, we already see that keeping too many animals is being punished, on a tax level. In Denmark, there's been some approaches to really, put a price tag on the cow that you keep. So what we can do is we can help reduce the amount of cows that have to be kept to produce the same output. And I believe that's a great opportunity for the farming community.
Okay, so it sounds like it could be good news for farmers. It's not all bad at all. So you talked earlier about scaling the product to bring down the price of the milk. Now, what are the plans for scale up? How do you see this product being scaled up over, up to 2030, I suppose, which is when you say that it could be 5% of global use.
Of course, we cannot do it alone. So there needs to be more companies like us who are approaching this topic, or also collaborators who scale with us and who help to scale the technology as a whole. What we have as a plan for the next couple of years, we want to scale our internal production capacity. We also want to be able to provide partners with the capacity to scale the production with us. And internally, we have now commissioned the first pre-industrial scale production bioreactor so that we can scale up our internal output. With that one, I think we can come quite close to a price that would make sense for on the market, but we do not reach complete price parity with the pre-industrial scale model, which is like a 500 liter system. But then once we move to the real industrial scale, that's where we can really make a difference, because once we reach price parity, it becomes something that can be really integrated into all of the processes. And for this, we want to have partners on our side. We are partnering with the dairy industry, and also industrial partners from the food industry who are embracing this technology because they do see the potential.
Okay. Well, one more question for you, Svenja. It's been lovely talking to you. Now, you've started this this startup company, this unicorn, hopefully. So, what advice would you give to aspiring entrepreneurs coming into the sort of food tech or alternative protein sectors? Is there anything you've learned from your valuable experience that you could kind of pass on to anybody else?
I would like to really encourage scientists who are, who are at the source of the innovation to really dare take the step and embrace the idea of putting an application, that can benefit humanity. And make their innovation, make their research into something that really benefits humanity as a whole. This is not a one-way street. It is something that can, give the impact and give the funding to really propel the research and innovation forward if, doing this through the startup route. Taking that leap, I think it's a little bit of a leap of faith. If you are in academia or in academic research, to trust that the innovation nowadays can be done through the industry and through of which the startups are an extension. The innovation, I think, it doesn't entirely come from academia as a whole anymore. It also comes to a really big extent through startups that are working on finding industrial applications or, like real day applications for their innovations.
And is there much financial support out there for startups like you? Has there been much help to sort of get to this stage?
I would say the interest that we receive, it was unexpectedly high. I thought that it would be much more difficult, but there is public sources of funding. There is also innovation can be pushed through VC funding, dedicated funds that are really interested in putting innovation to real life applications. We have different funding bodies in our company now who are interested in really advancing science and pushing innovation, supporting founders to make that leap of faith. I think it can become less regulated. That would be something that could still need more support. So if you are trying to push an innovation, you want to go out of academia, of course the universities partly have offices in place to kind of support founders in starting startups, but particularly in Europe, it's not the standard route yet. It is well known in the US, but in Europe, it's more of the rare thing to do, I guess.
Okay. Well, I'm very excited to see this product on the market. I grew up on a dairy farm, so I have first-hand experience of the industry as it is. You know, I've stood in the middle of a milking parlor, and I've seen the process from beginning to end. So it seems quite right that that kind of technology like this should come along, and I'm excited to see it. So thank you very much, Svenja Danowitz Prosoda, if I said that right.
Yes, that's correct.
Yes, okay, good. Well, thank you very much for coming on Future Foods interviews, and I very much look forward to hearing more about the product.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.